Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Latavia Roberson and PR maven Jess Manning about Beyoncé's historic Coachella performance and the 20th anniversary of Destiny's Child. Entertainment reporter Jill Wicker and hip-hop artist Renegade El Rey are in the studio to chat about Kendrick Lamar winning the Pulitzer Prize for music. They also talk about Atlanta's changing music scene and more. TV1's new crime and justice series, Evidence of Innocence, is finally premiering on June 4th, and I will re-air a portion of my Upfront interview with the show's executive producer, Rashawn McDonald. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is looking for men to portray bouncers for the upcoming project, Dr. Bird. The men must appear to be in their 20s to 30s with a height between 5'10 to 6'3. They must also have an intimidating presence and no visible tattoos. The men must also have nice black slacks and black dress shoes. All actors must be available to work on Wednesday, May 2nd. If this is you, please email your name, contact phone number, current photo, and sizes to drbird@centralcasting.com with bouncer in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, watch the exciting new trailer for The Equalizer 2 at WCLK.com. In the movie, Denzel Washington stars as Robert McCall, a former hitman who serves an unflinching justice for the exploited and oppressed. But how far will he go when it's someone that he loves? The Equalizer 2 also features Bill Pullman, Melissa Leo, Ashton Sanders, and is directed by Antoine Fuqua. And finally, Insecure star Issa Rae is looking for talented writers through her script-to-screen contest. Her company, Color Creative, is partnering with BET's Networks and the American Black Film Festival to find new voices for a television series. The one-page pitch can be for a drama or comedy and will be fully developed and produced. Three finalists will also be selected to receive a trip to the 2018 American Black Film Festival in Miami from June 13th through the 17th. Submissions are being accepted now until midnight this Wednesday, May 2nd. Go to WCLK.com for more details. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Wolf Creek Amphitheater, presenting an evening of smooth jazz on Saturday, May the 5th, with performances by Brian Culbertson, Norman Brown, Najee, and Josh Vietti. The evening will be hosted by MC Lightfoot. Food, drinks, and coolers are welcomed. Ticket information is available at all Ticketmaster outlets or the Wolf Creek box office at 1-800-653-8000.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man, Ray Cornelius, Upfront, 91.9 WCLK.
My left stroke just went viral.
Right stroke put lil' baby in the spiral. Soprano C, we like to keep it on the high note. It's levels to it, you and I know. Tell him be humble.
Hold up.
Sit
hold
down.
Hold up.
Sit down,
holla, holla,
be humble,
holla, holla,
sit down,
holla, holla,
be humble,
holla, holla,
sit down,
holla, holla,
be humble.
That was a snippet from Grammy Award-winning hip-hop artist Kendrick Lamar's hugely popular single, Humble. The song comes from his Damn album, which recently garnered the prestigious Pulitzer Prize for Music. This is the first time a hip-hop artist has ever received the award, and the first for a non-classical or jazz artist. Check out my conversation with Atlanta-based entertainment writer and pop culture critic, Jill Wicker, as well as hip-hop artist and writer, Renegade El Rey, as we discuss this historic moment. We also talk about Atlanta's changing music scene and more.
Hey guys, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing well.
So I'm talking to Jill Wicker, who is an amazing entertainment writer. You're a reporter. You are just all over the place.
Yeah, thank you.
Billboard
thank you.
And
yeah.
Creative Loafing, as well as the AJC. Dope. And Renegade El Rey, you are all over the place as well with your music. You're a songwriter. You're in the studio just
your
thing.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. All day, every day.
So, you know, Kendrick Lamar has made history, and very, very big announcement 2 weeks ago, and just kind of want to talk about that. He is actually coming after some amazing artists that have won this award before. It all began with George Walker, who was the first African-American composer to win the Pulitzer Prize for music, followed by the amazing Wynton Marsalis, who was the first jazz artist to win, and Ornette Coleman, and then Henry Threadgood. So Kendrick is coming behind some amazing people. So let's talk a little bit about that.
I mean, I think it's pretty significant because it speaks to the prevalence of hip-hop. So, right, this isn't just the first win for hip-hop, but it's the first for a non-classical, non-jazz artist. And for it, the first to be a hip-hop artist is pretty significant. And it just speaks to the fact that I think in 2017, hip-hop surpassed rock as being the dominant genre.
Right.
And so it really just cements that and lets people know that hip-hop is here to stay and that it really is a genre that is powerful and it really can do some really amazing things.
Mm, these are the things that our forefathers of hip-hop, you know, and not even just the forefathers of hip-hop, but the moguls of hip-hop right now, the Diddy's and, you know, Dame Dash's, these are the things that they were gunning for from the jump anyway. So, you know, big shout out to Kendrick Lamar for it. Like she said, like, this is big for not only our genre to be recognized, but for us to be out any other genre, you know, because they always include us last. Like, okay, now we'll give it to you. When a lot of the times we are the influences for those genres. Mm-hmm. You know, like country music right now is
absolutely
like heavy 808s, and you know, they're doing all of the different influences that we've always been doing, you know. So
where do you think that this is going to take hip-hop music? Because right now it's like, I mean, to me, the sky's the limit. I mean, this is, you can't get any bigger than this. So
oh, absolutely. It forces people to respect it in a way that I think they haven't. So when you talk about the forefathers and things like that, when you look at the history of the Grammys, there's always been this history of hip-hop artists boycotting the Grammys,
right,
or hip-hop artists saying, we deserve respect. We shouldn't just be getting awards for best rap album. We should be getting the Album of the Year awards, which Kendrick didn't get this year.
Right, exactly.
And so I think that awards like this forces, and it's unfortunate because the Grammys should have already been paying attention, but it forces some of these other companies and these other organizations to pay attention to us in a way that maybe they weren't before.
I would definitely say, like, to piggyback off what you're saying, as far as the Grammys paying attention, I feel just to have, because I actually went to the Grammys this year. This was my first to be even invited and able to walk on the red carpet and stuff. So it just was like an eye-opener for me, and just to have somebody like Cardi B be nominated,
absolutely,
like things like that, show me that they are paying attention. I mean, because hip hop is not only hip hop culture. Hip hop is actually pop culture now.
Absolutely.
You get what I'm saying? So it's like you said, like, now we're being recognized, but I think they definitely have their eyes on us, not only for those that kick knowledge, as we say, but those like I said, like a Cardi B or the Migos or whatever. So I think more than anything, this whole Pulitzer Prize for KDOT, I think now that just balances it out. That just balances the vision out, because, you know, as everybody talks about, like I just said, Migos and your trap rappers and your mumble rappers, everybody talks about hip hop in that vein. Like, okay, that's all that it is now. You know, when we still have your Kendricks, your Big Crits, and your J. Cole, who just dropped, you know, Kids on Drugs, and the whole entire album is like a satire.
Absolutely.
You get what I'm saying? So I think more than anything, it just balances it out.
Yeah, I read about this year's Pulitzer process, and I think more than 180 submissions were considered originally, but Kendrick's was the only hip-hop nomination.
Mm.
And so, I mean, I don't know about previous years, but I think that hopefully more hip-hop artists and more mainstream artists in general will nominate themselves, or they will get the nominations, because maybe in previous years they didn't think, well, I shouldn't be nominated for that, or I shouldn't go up for that because I'm not going to be considered. They only consider classical works. So I think this breaks open the door for people who are already doing this kind of work to be considered, right? Because they were talking about the fact that a lot of the jazz submissions incorporated hip-hop,
right,
you know, but the only fully hip-hop work that was nominated was this Kendrick work.
Kenny them. My resume is real enough for two millenniums. A better way to make a way, start defending them. I meditate and moderate all of my wins again. I'm hanging on the fence again. I'm always on your mind. I put my lyric and my lifeline on the line. And ain't no limit when I might shine, might grind. You rolling with it at the right time, right now. Only for the dollar sign.
Bad girl, living now. Swear, leaving now. On your pulse, like a CDM. Yes, on a fish, like a premium.
I wanted to go to something that I, when I was looking up information about you, Jewel, about Atlanta now being a place for music again.
Oh, absolutely.
There was a time when, you know, you had LaFace Records and yeah. everybody was coming here producing music. You didn't have to necessarily go to LA or New York to produce music. But now that's coming back again. So I want to talk a little bit about Atlanta's music scene now and where you see it.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting, right? So you talk about the fact that LaFace was here and then we had So Def. We had all of these really powerful labels that were based here in Atlanta. And then it kind of went back to the old way where artists are from here and we are the kind of, we make the culture, but then we outsource it to LA and New York, which is super frustrating, right? Because we're the ones that they look to know what's hip, what's going on, what's the latest trend. But then you have to go to these LAs and these New Yorks to conduct business. And I think that's really frustrating. But with the film and TV industry booming, and I think they added a tax incentive for music to try to piggyback off that film and TV, the hope is that not only will Atlanta be the source of the culture, but the source of business as well, so that people will come here and spend their money and they'll start their their tours here. They'll rehearse for their tours here because, you know, you make money when people do that. And you'll record here and all of these things, and the labels will start to have offices here because, I mean, it's totally frustrating when you are the ones that are making the music that is dominating the charts and dominating culture. But when you look around and you're looking to conduct business, you have to go somewhere else.
I really can't put it. I can't put it any better than that because that's what we see every day, all day. Like, you know, I'm in the studio all day, but a lot of times, as soon as I get that break, boom, I'm back out in the streets. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, but when I'm out in the street and I see the wave, you know, and we like, I deal with a lot of people that are in East Atlanta Village all the time. You know, we on Edgewood, you know, shout out to my homie Jay Wise, because we did a whole wave of artists, you know, that, like you said, that's where they bring it. That's why we call them culture vultures, because, like, we're the ones creating the wave and what's hot, and, you know, and then now they come and grab it, take it, run with it to L.A., and then now we see it on TV, and we like, but we just doing that. Or better yet, like the conversation we had earlier off air when we were talking about how, you know, African-Americans create the cultures, you know, all over. Like, by the time it makes mainstream, it's like, they did that like three years ago.
Yeah,
like,
when
years
you
ago.
Think about one of the number one songs heard this year was by an artist named Camila Cabello, and it was called Havana. And she goes, he brought me back to East Atlanta. It's like, you've never been to East Atlanta in your life. It's a dope record, and it has Young Thug. It gave Young Thug his first number one.
But it
speaks to the prevalence of the culture here in Atlanta. Yeah. And, like, the fact that somebody would be name-dropping East Atlanta in a song, where it's like, you know what I mean?
That's the melting pot. East Atlanta Village is where you got hipsters, rocksters, you know what I'm saying, trap rappers. Just, you know, whether you call yourself an MC or a rapper, whatever, everybody is right there in East Atlanta Village. Like, so, like you said, to even for her, who we know she's not. Well, we can't say.
I mean,
we
maybe she has. I'm not sure she's been to East Atlanta. I would doubt
it.
But I think it just speaks. Or even if she has, the people who are listening to her record probably have not, right?
Okay.
She's not making that for people who live in East Atlanta. She's making that for a pop audience.
Right.
But you're putting that on this platform that it hasn't previously been on, and everybody else is already like, this is where the culture comes from. You know what I mean? This is it just speaks to the prevalence of Atlanta and how powerful that culture is for sure.
Definitely.
Well, guys, thank you so much for stopping by the Upfront Studios. Again, you're listening to the voices of Jewel Wicker as well as Renegade El Rey. Guys, thank you so much for stopping by.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Georgia State's Rialto Center, presenting Larry Harlow's Latin Legends Band with special guest Oscar Hernandez. It's a closing night salsa party Saturday, April 28th at 8 p.m. Ticket information is available online at rialto.gsu.edu.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you...
Hey, y'all, this is Logan Browning from Netflix's Dear White People, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
TV One announced this week that its new crime and justice series, Evidence of Innocence, will premiere on Monday, June the 4th. Upfront got a chance to visit the set of the series last year in May and talk to the show's executive producer, Rashawn McDonald. Here's what he had to say about the show and partnering with Jupiter Entertainment.
We're doing this in conjunction with Jupiter.
Okay.
And they have a tremendous history of researching these type of cases, because I wanted particular cases.
Okay.
And they sent me 40 cases. And then I said, they don't, because see, there are tons of cases of DNA situations where people are exonerated. Mm-hmm. But I needed the cases where people were exonerated and chose to either do good for the community or reinvest their lives back into the society. Like in this case with Madeline Ware, she went and got a degree as a medical assistant. So that means that she wants to get back. She's not sitting on the corner with her hand out. She's not sitting over there, woe is me, or leaning on her family. She wants to get back out there. And that's these are the cases I wanted. People got out of jail who started their own business, whether it's restaurants or lawn cleaning services or Miles Ahead, which is about giving the ex-cons their first job at landscaping services. So those are the cases I wanted, because those are the cases that are motivating stories that tell me that if I'm locked up for 15 years, what was I thinking about? When I got out, I wanted to do something else with my life. I didn't want to just get out just sit on the wall with me. So it was about finding the cases, and I did in relationship with Jupiter. And then TV One gave me an opportunity to tell the story that I wanted to tell.
Evidence of Innocence premieres on Monday, June the 4th at 10 p.m. on TV One.
This is Jamal Ahmed, and this is the WCLK Jazz Calendar. Tonight, Larry Harlow's Latin Legends Band with Oscar Hernandez are playing the Rialto Center for the Arts at Georgia State. Milkshake and the Milkshake Quintet play Sweet Auburn Seafood tonight. Soul jazz trumpeter Lynn Roundtree and jazz guitarist David P. Stevens bring Motown Philly, Jazz and Soul to St. James Live tonight at 7 p.m. and on Sunday, April the 29th at 7 p.m. at St. James Live, jazz guitarist Matt Marshak brings a mix of jazz, funk, blues, and R&B. EC3 featuring Angelica Boudreau and Nevena Rhodes are playing jazz nights at Studio 800 on Friday, May 5th and Saturday, May 6th. Brian Culbertson, Norman Brown, Najee, and Josh Vietti will present an evening of smooth jazz at the Wolf Creek Amphitheater on Saturday, May the 5th. And finally, Avery Sunshine, Layla Hathaway, Robert Glasper, and more are performing at the 2018 St. Lucia Jazz Festival, May the 6th through the 13th. Also, yours truly, Jamal Ahmed, will be hosting the Soul of Jazz from the festival. Information on travel packages are available at LT Travel Connections at 770-323-7118. That's today's Jazz Calendar. For these and more live jazz performances, log on to WCLK.com and check out the events calendar. I'm Jamal Ahmed.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Lift every voice and sing. Till earth and heaven
That was megastar Beyoncé performing the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, during the recent Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival. The singer, actress, and pop music icon made history as the first African-American female performer to headline the festival and performed a two-hour-long tribute to HBCUs and Black Greek-lettered fraternities and sororities. Her performance was even the subject of a New York Times article written by Miles E. Johnson titled, Beyoncé and the End of Respectability Politics. Here to discuss that and much much more is original Destiny's Child member Latavia Roberson and PR maven Jess Manning.
Well, ladies, welcome back to Upfront. Latavia Roberson, how are you?
I am wonderful. How about yourself?
It's been a year.
I you know what? I can't even believe that it's been a year.
It's been a year.
Since I've been here.
Yeah.
Oh, time.
And then
flies.
It's been a while since I've actually seen you on a red carpet or just, you know, you just been hiding from us.
Time flies and things happen.
Jess Manning, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Good morning.
We usually kind of have you, you know, on the other side kind of doing some things, but we got you on the microphone today.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
New things, new year.
So, ladies, a lot of exciting stuff has been happening in the world of music. Everybody has been buzzing, pun intended, Beehive. About Beyonce's.
I love that. I love that. I didn't even catch it at first.
Like, okay.
Buzzing about her performance at Coachella, which actually made history. She was the first African-American female performer to headline Coachella. Mm-hmm. And everyone was talking about it because it was really like going to an HBCU homecoming. If you've ever, you know, attended a game here at Clark Atlanta, or if you've ever gone to Battle of the Bands, you know, you've got the music, you've got the I don't even know what the J Setters is what they call the girls.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so.
I mean, you just have all of that action going on, and Beyonce was able to put all of that in a 2-hour performance, and then she was just able to throw some gems in there. I mean, she had some excerpts from a Malcolm X speech. She had some samples from Nina Simone. She did a nod to School Days, and just that all of that was mixed into this performance.
She did the National Black Anthem.
Yeah, Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Lift Every Voice and Sing, and that's something that, you know, being a alumni of Clark and Atlanta University, one exceptional university, we had to learn that. I don't know if they still include that in the curriculum of things that the kids, you know, the students need to learn, but I just thought, you know, watching it, it was, and it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what? I'm like, what's going on? You know? I was just like, you know, I was mesmerized, number one, because of the production that she put in and the work that she put into it. But I was also thinking from my own perspective as a, you know, consultant in PR and having been in entertainment for quite some time and having worked in music, knowing, and I'm sure Latavia could speak to this, artists don't always have the license or the creative license to be able to have a concept as she did and be able to produce it and put it into that format in a place like Coachella.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my biggest thing was, is we got it.
Right.
But did the Coachella audience get it?
Yeah.
And that was something that I posted on HBCU Buzz as a comment. And it was like a flurry of comments after that in response to mine saying, nah, they didn't get, you know, that definitely didn't get it. But it was so much bigger in terms of what she did. And I really have to believe that she had some purposeful planning. So to speak, as to what this meant and what she knew that this would mean for the culture.
Right.
And so I really was just, it made me extremely proud to know and to see a woman having that kind of creative power to produce a show that she wanted to produce.
Yeah.
This wasn't something that they paid her to do. Yeah. Yes!
Well, Tommy, what was your thoughts on when you got a chance to see it?
Well, my thoughts is this. I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. I believe that Beyonce used her platform to pay homage to all of these entities that we just spoke about. She did what she did. She did what she had to do. And she spoke. She did it in the way that she could do it. She's a performer. She's an entertainer. And she let everybody understand what it is that she's feeling about what the things are going on. Like, in I believe that it was from a place, you know, in her heart at this point. And, oh my gosh. And when can I say that she killed it like 12 times? Yes and ma'am.
And to do back-to-back, you know, weekends, because as the headliner, you perform for both weekends. So
I did not even know that she was going to do it again. But then when I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, yes. Down, Queen Bee.
So I ran across this amazing article that was written in the New York Times, and it talked about the end of respectability politics. And it was talking about, you know, basically her performance, you know, having this, as you say, homage to all things, you know, African American culture, the HBCU school days, fraternities, and sorority life, and being able to do this and not apologize for it or not hold back. One of the questions I was going to ask you, Latavia, is you're a member. You were a member of Destiny's Child. You were there in the beginning. At some point, was there ever a time, and I want to try to phrase this correctly, was there ever a time that you all had to hold back on your black girl magic because of the audience that you were performing for?
Well, you know what?
We're trying to reach.
Well, the one thing that I definitely feel about my place in, you know, with Destiny's Child is that I was a part of one of the biggest black girl movements that started. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, to be a part of that and to see where this woman has come and to see what she's done, me being a very good friend to her and her, me seeing her do what she said she was going to do, as us being best friends, sitting in the bedroom as kids and all of that stuff, just to see her do all of this, I'm very humbled to be a part of one of the biggest black girl movements that started at that time.
Yeah.
So everything that she's doing, she does it for a reason, mm-hmm. you know? And there's nothing else that I can really say about that besides that.
Is she, and it's funny that you mentioned you guys, you know, because I can just see you guys, you know, eating popcorn, probably watching, you know, maybe Boys in the Hood or maybe watching one of those, you know, black films. But just, is she hitting those things that she said she wanted to do at that time? That,
absolutely.
You know, dreaming about wanting to perform here or do this or.
Absolutely. You know. Well, of course, when we were 15, we weren't talking about Coachella or anything like that.
Right.
But what I can say is everything that she said, even as kids, that she was going to do, she's done it and exceeded that.
Yeah, wow. One of the things that I thought was really interesting in that article, and this is from the End of Respectability Politics, and something that just really caught my eye, it was this: all black people should follow her lead and refuse to shrink blackness. Black people often negotiate how much of ourselves we should show to make others comfortable. Black people often feel the need to edit parts of our culture and upbringing for the sake of appearing respectable. That is, of course, until our music and style are appropriated by the very people we're attempting not to alienate,
mm-hmm.
or to not
absolutely.
Alienate.
Absolutely.
And I just thought that was just so, you know.
That's happening not just in entertainment. It's happening in corporate America. It's happening, you know, just every day. You know, every day we are forced. It's not always by choice.
Yeah.
We are most times forced to have to be more like others than like ourselves and like our true selves. I remember reading a book called Switching about black women having to switch and how it's important for us to not have to show who we are in the workplace. We have to really, you know, turn on this one person and then turn it off when we get home. We become who we really are when we're home, but then we're somebody else and so it's exactly what he's talking about in that article is what has happened. Mm-hmm. But the more we see our culture being, you know, taken over and used, and we are not benefiting from it financially, we are creators. That's who we are. That's our legacy. That's in our DNA, as Kendrick Lamar would say. Mm-hmm. And it's just who we are. We will continue to do that, and we will always do that, and they will always appropriate who we are, because that is, we're just cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Our culture is just cool.
Yeah.
So I do get what he's saying in the article. It's very true, and it's continuing to be on, and it's not, I don't see it ending, honestly. I don't.
You're trifling, good for nothing type of brother. Silly me, why haven't I found another? A baller. When times get hard, need someone to help me out. Instead of a scrub like you who don't know what a man's about.
Can't pay my bills, can't pay my telephone bills, can't pay my automobiles, can't pay the baby with the chills. I don't think you do, 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 do.
So this year is a big year for Destiny's Child, 20th anniversary. Doesn't seem like The time has gone by.
Oh, why are you purposely trying to make me feel older or something?
You were 2 years old when all of this was taking place. You guys
I'm
were
two years old now. What you talking about?
What is one of your fondest memories of just in the very very beginning of the group when you guys were maybe as young girls right before Star Search, I guess.
One of the fondest memories that I have.
Hey, that's
with,
a long time ago.
Because Ed McMahon ain't been look. Hey Ed. You know, it's been a very 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 long time. But one of the things that I remember, like to this date, is sisterhood. Us young girls. Wanting the same thing, wanting the same goal, striving to do the same thing. Sisterhood. Black young ladies banding together to do what it is that we love. And, hey, the Lord said so. So it happened.
Yeah.
I just used to love y'all's outfits. I said, these girls just, I mean, they would always be matching, but they would be different. Everyone had their own little style and their own personal style. And it was really great because it was good to see so many girls emulate the confidence that you all had. And that was what was really unique at that time when I remember back.
Yeah.
Wasn't that long ago?
Yeah. It was long ago enough, though.
Yes.
What was one of the, I guess, one of the favorite songs that you liked to perform when you guys were out on the road?
I have so many favorites because I just, me, myself, I was an entertainer. I'm an entertainer, so I love being on that stage performing, but one of the ones that just had the most, I guess, energy for me, it was Bugaboo. And that wasn't one of, like, you know, the major singles or anything like that, but the energy was so high on that song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, like, and then Jumpin' was was one that made me feel kind of grown when we performed Jumpin'.
Yeah. So what else is new?
Well, you know, it's still my book. It's still a work in progress. You know, I'm adding some things to it. I'm in production right now, speaking with production companies right now, publishing companies, to do that. And I'm doing the docuseries, I Am Latavia, in correspondence with my book.
Okay.
So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a while to be able to let people into your life, but, you know, I'm ready to go down that road now, finally.
All right, well, ladies, thank you so much for stopping by the Upfront Studios. Again, I'm talking to Latavia Roberson of Destiny's Child, as well as Jess Manning, PR Maven here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Thank
you guys so much for stopping by.
Yes.
And
yes.
We'll be talking to you soon.
All right.
Thank you
so
much.
Well, that'll do it for today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, Latavia Roberson, Jess Manning, Jewel Wicker, Renegade El Rey, and Rashawn McDonald. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, May the 5th, for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta.
If you liked today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.